The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Now we have David Grimm, editor for our online daily news site, and he's here to share some recent stories. I'm Sarah Crespi. First up, we have a story on wheels in the wild. Anyone who's owned a small rodent, mouse, gerbil, hamster, has probably wondered about these critters' fascination with the so-called exercise wheel. Are they running for freedom, to escape boredom and anxiety, or out of pure enjoyment? Well, scientists have been considering this problem as well. So, Dave, how much wheel use are researchers seeing in the lab?
In the lab, rodents use the wheel a lot. In fact, they can log more than 5 kilometers a night on these stationary wheels. And there is some evidence that they do it because they enjoy it. Rodents will go to great lengths to unlock a locked running wheel, and they seem to have a similar response to it as they do to food and even cocaine. So it suggests that they're doing it because they like doing it. But the question is this really a normal impulse to want to run on these wheels? Or is it some sort of obsessive behavior that's spurred by being locked up in a cage all day?
How do you test this kind of thing?
You put these wheels in your backyard. And that's exactly what researchers did in this study. They put an exercise wheel in the backyard of one of the researchers. They trained an infrared camera on it. They set out some food to attract animals. And lo and behold, over 3 years, more than 200,000 animals use this wheel. And that includes not just rats and mice, but shrews, frogs, and even a snail at one point.
Okay, so that means that everybody loves a wheel, but there's also more to this than just understanding the mind of a rodent or a free rodent. It actually has some useful information behind it as well.
Yeah, if we can figure out why, for example, certain strains of mice are more sedentary than others, it could help shed light on genetic differences between people. Why are some of us more active than others? Why do some of us like to run marathons and others of us like to sit home and watch television? So some implications beyond just the backyard running wheel.
And there are some videos of this on the site.
There is a very fun video on the site.
Next up, we have a story on a mysterious disease. Kawasaki disease is one of the world's most baffling illnesses. There's no known causative agent, and it's been recognized since 1967. So, Dave, what do we know about this disease?
Well, this is a disease that sickens 12,000 children every year in Japan. Also strikes children in the United States, South Korea, and a few other countries. Children tend to come down with symptoms when they're between 6 months and 5 years old. They can develop a fever, a rash, and in very severe cases can have inflammation of the coronary arteries, which can lead to internal bleeding or even heart attacks.
So the researchers in this study were building on earlier work that looked at how the geographical distribution of these cases might relate to the source of the disease.
That's right. There was already some suggestion that the disease might be carried on the wind. And that came from a study of a few cases in both Japan and the United States that showed that there was seemed to be a spike in cases that coincided when prevailing winds were coming from Central Asia. And so in the new study, the researchers decided to probe this a bit further.
What were they able to tell about the relationship between the wind and this disease?
Well, what they did is they looked at cases stretching all the way back to 1970. They looked at a variety of places in Japan, and they found that indeed there seemed to be a correlation between a spike in cases and wind patterns. Specifically, they found that when the air was blowing into the cities, had spent a lot of time in northeastern China, specifically an area known as the Northeast China Plain, there seemed to be a rise in cases.
Is there anything special about this region of China that might strengthen the link between the location and Kawasaki disease?
Well, this is a highly agricultural region of China. And so the researchers suggest that perhaps there's a toxin that's produced by a fungus that lives on the crops in this area that gets picked up by the wind and transported to other areas of the globe. And the researchers actually did some preliminary aerial surveys where they collected air above this region, and they identified several species of Candida, which is a fungus that's responsible for a lot of common human infections and can cause symptoms similar to Kawasaki disease. Now, they don't really have the smoking gun yet, but this is some intriguing preliminary research.
Lastly, we have a story on the purity of the placenta. It's been a while since we've talked about the human microbiome on this podcast. So, Dave, where have our microbial friends turned up this time?
Well, Sarah, they've popped up in the placenta. And this is really remarkable because the conventional wisdom is that the placenta is sterile. And the placenta is obviously very important for a developing fetus. It's how the fetus gets oxygen, food, and how the mother essentially removes waste from the fetus's environment. And for a long time, people had sort of suspected that this was a very sterile environment. And yet, babies are born with bacteria, and these bacteria don't match those from the vagina. So there's the suggestion that they must come from somewhere else. And the placenta being so close to the newborn was one potential target.
They needed to actually collect placentas and examine them. Where did they come from?
They came from over 300 pregnancies that the researchers looked at. And the researchers extracted DNA from the placentas, and they sequenced it for evidence of bacteria. And they found evidence of bacterial communities living on the placenta. And what was really interesting is these communities did not match those from the surrounding region. So they didn't match those from the vagina or the gut, but they did seem to match those from the human mouth.
But just because the bacteria match those in the mouth doesn't necessarily mean that that's where they're coming from.
Not necessarily. It could be that these bacteria have just evolved a very similar community to that seen in the mouth.
Does this mean that there's no sterile part of the human body?
It's certainly starting to feel that way. But one other really interesting implication of the study is it suggests that if these bacteria are coming from the mouth, and there have been studies that have suggested that there is a link between gum disease and preterm birth, that taking care of your mouth may be a good way to take care of your baby.
What else is on the site this week, Dave?
Well, Sarah, we've got a story about how blocking pain receptors may increase lifespan. Also a story about how redwood trees grow so high. And for Science Insider, we have stories about how officials at the National Institutes of Health have been accused of improperly influencing the investigation of a premature infant study. Also a story about how Earth scientists are reacting to a possible loss of Russian GPS stations. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Sarah.
David Grimm is the editor for our online daily news site. I'm Sarah Crespi. You can check out the latest news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.